It's my great pleasure to introduce Howie. And I'd like to say at the beginning that Howie's probably the only person I know who flies north in November. He flew from San Francisco. But I understand he also flies to other Canadian cities like Regina and Saskatoon, places I've never been. He brings 50...
They have real sanghas there.
They wear their boots inside. He brings 50 years of meditation practice to us. So if he did an hour a day, that's 365 hours a year, times 50 years, which brings us to 18,250 hours. And I think that's probably a minimum. Anyway, he has led retreats and studied in the U.S. and internationally. He's studied in many Buddhist traditions, and he says he was strongly influenced by a Hindu sage called H.W.L. Punja. He has a master's in counseling psychology and does private mentoring and counseling. On Tuesday night, I sat online with 50 others to hear him from San Francisco. He established Mission Dharma there 35 years ago, and he has spent untold number of Tuesdays leading the Sangha. He's written a book called Invitation to Meditation, How to Find Peace Wherever You Are. And he's here to share his experience and teaching of the Dharma. So we welcome you warmly.
Well, first of all, thank you for giving me the opportunity to be with you again. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. It's been since before COVID. And because I always carry with me a lot of warmth about VIMS, your community, you individually, and so I plant the seed of joy is planted just in the thought of coming here and being with you, and just knowing that you are a light in this world, a mature, I don't mean by age, but a mature meditation community, many, many years of practice. So in one way, and I think I was saying this to Brock or June, that that in some way you do the heavy lifting by just showing up and feeling, because each of us carries a certain transmission power of the quality of our mind and body, understanding, and it rubs off. On the, that's why I always say we commit ourselves to the practice of non-harming for the people who have to live with us every day. But we also commit to peace, and never has it been so important to be an example of peace right now. It's just heartbreakingly painful in the world where the cycle of violence just keeps repeating itself, and there's just not quite enough of a critical mass of those who know that this is a teacher in Advaita Vedanta tradition put it, isn't it, Nisargadatta. He says the world is the way it is because people are the way they are. And as long as people are the way they are, the world will continue to be the way it is. And if we want a peaceful world, we have to have peaceful people. Peace is not something that can be imposed on the world. It has to start within each of our hearts. So I always say, whenever I meet with any group that you are engaged in, whether you knew it or not, or whether you make this a conscious intention, you're engaged in radical social action. It shouldn't be so radical, but it is, because like the Buddha's teaching, it goes against the stream of our habit of blaming and demanding and just chronically being in a state of dissatisfaction and then going out of ourselves in search rather than settling back into ourselves and discovering that so close, the natural peace and ease that is the natural peace and ease of our nature that can really never find anywhere other than right where you're sitting right now. So you're in on that secret, that what's sometimes called an open secret. The world needs us, actually, to be examples of that. And the way that trickles or ripples in ways that we have no idea, don't underestimate it. What is it that a candle doesn't provide much light, but in a dark room it illuminates? And so each person here. So I also want to welcome the those who are on Zoom. We call them, at least in my neighborhood, we call those on Zoom the Zoomies, and you're the Roomies. So welcome, Zoomies. I'm used to you after every Tuesday for 4 years and about 25 retreats online. But I will be orienting a lot toward those who are in the room. We'll manage to get along, I'm sure, just fine. But I'm happy all of you are here. And mostly when I sat down here today, I was just happy to be able to, really beyond all the teachings, I'm happy to just marinate in quiet with you. It's just the healing power of just having our attention in the same location as our body and not doing a lot. So you might even consider the ideas, we're just noticing. And whatever you notice over the course of this retreat, this is both wisdom and love, wisdom and compassion. Whatever it is that you notice, you don't have to do anything about it. And you don't have to undo it. You don't have to fix anything. You don't have to figure anything out. This is not mindfulness. And love and kindness are not problem solving. They are the response of the heart. And it turns out that it is that non-contentious, non-interfering attention to things just the way they are. This expression that's used a lot in the teachings, yatha bhuta, things as they are. It's this meeting of things as they are that brings the softness to the heart, brings clarity back to our minds, that helps us just keep slowly, slowly, without trying to, it keeps brushing the dust of memory so that just the natural clarity shines through. And then with clarity, the expression of that clarity, clear comprehension, is tenderness, kindness. We feel naturally more connected to ourselves, connected to each other. And it's not because we did something other than we stopped and cultivated that one quality of, one primary quality of mindfulness or so many names for it. So we start, though, a retreat like this, wisdom and love, with the only thing, the main things that make it possible that we already have. And I always like to start with that, what Suzuki Roshi from the Zen tradition calls the ultimate fact, that you are aware here. It's so obvious that we miss it. That this is the ultimate fact, is that you are aware. So even just sensing now as I speak, that quality of being aware of being aware. There's awareness here. And I didn't have to create it. I didn't have to become aware. I had to just be aware. I don't know about you, but the moment I am simply aware of that simple fact of being aware, the second thing that seems so obvious is I feel my sitting body. And I didn't have to try to do that either. It's just, oh, aware of the sitting body. And it seems that when awareness and sitting body are together, something in me begins to calm down. I feel a little more still. I feel a little less caught up in whatever I was preoccupied with before. So the past has basically passed, and the future is irrelevant. There's just this. And I didn't have to do much. So we will exploit this capacity that we have to be aware, so natural to us, to be embodied, to feel that sense of our mind in the same place as our body, and then feel all the effects of that. And then to discover really what reality is. And when I say reality, I don't mean historical. We know a lot about ourselves, but we often overlook the experience of ourselves directly. So reality will be just the only thing you have to notice over the course of this retreat. And I know this is not new to you, but I say it anyway. We notice only six things. Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and thoughts and images, and then the combination of sensations and thoughts, we get moods and emotions. That's all. The Buddha called it the all. So just naming these things, I'm already a little more here. I was a little scattered when I came in the room. All of a sudden, here we are. So that's something that I feel so happy to talk about and celebrate, and that we can marinate in that simple experience of being aware of one of those six presently arising sense experiences. But the Buddha Dharma, just what seems to inspire us, is that that there is, even though the path, as it's often described, goes nowhere, the beautiful rain, there's a Japanese monk poet, Ryokan, who said, Buddha is your mind and the way goes nowhere. Don't look for anything but this. He says, if you point your cart north when you want to go south, how will you ever arrive? So even though the path goes nowhere, if we stay here long enough, there is a transformational process that happens. Like I said, our hearts tenderize, our eyes clear. Things start to make sense. We start to have understanding. And what unfolds is a liberation process where confusion is dispelled and a sense of greater freedom comes, greater open-heartedness. I was watching a video. This is a little bit of a self-disclosure. I like to play golf. I figure that's a safe thing to say in Victoria because people golf. I don't say that everywhere, believe it or not. Self-conscious about it. watching a video, and the teacher kept saying, you want to practice this to lose your inhibitions. You want to lose your inhibitions. And he kept repeating, lose your inhibitions, because we tend to be so controlled. And I said, oh, that's like Dharma. That's like Dharma. Just the inhibition of chronic self-consciousness and worry and desire, things that create so much contraction. The more we see that things are changing, we let go. And as Ajahn Chah, the wonderful Thai forest master, said, if you let go a little, you'll have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you'll have a lot of peace. And if you let go completely, you'll have complete peace and freedom. So we're engaged in something that doesn't go anywhere, but it leads to more freedom. And the more you're here, the more we realize as individuals that we're, as I already alluded to this, we are impacting each other dramatically by our thoughts and words and actions. And because of that, what can be a great fuel for our practice, a great inspiration for our practice, is one, to free our hearts of so much preoccupation, to unleash our love, our compassion, free our energy up to be of benefit. So we devote ourselves to the practice. We engage in the basic rituals that remind us this is a very intimate, very collective experience. We say, I go to the Buddha, I go to that quality of wakefulness, I go to the Dharma, to the way things are right now, I go to the Sangha, all equal. I both offer support to the others who are practicing. I receive support from those who are offering. This, I engage in this system, being together in a system of mutual generosity. If this isn't dana, just showing up here, I don't know what is dana, being the generosity. So we start with a ritual. I go to the Buddha for refuge. Go to the Dharma for refuge. Go to the Sangha for refuge. So really, it's on one hand, it's just so simple, it's just here. But on the other hand, we're all Buddhas. And we use, for the purpose of awakening, we use the Dharma, the teachings, in the most immediate sense, whatever's happening. And that keeps reminding us that the way is here. And we both use and offer ourselves to each other. So let's chant this, and it also connects us with the thousands of years of people doing what we're doing here. And I don't think I can hear the Zoomies and the chant, but they can hear us. So I'll just do a very brief one-line introduction, then we'll do homage to the awakened one, perfectly enlightened, and then I go to the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha three times. And we'll do it in Pali, and we'll do a call and response, because many of you may not know this chant. Han tamayan buddha ratana satinayan jakaroma se. Namo tassa, your turn. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi. Sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi. Buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi. Sangham saranam gacchami.